Chapter 47. After his meeting with Dirk and Julia, St. Julian Perlmutter rolled up his sleeves and went to work. Once he walked the trail leading to a lost ship, he became obsessed. No lead, no rumor, no matter how seemingly insignificant, was left unexplored. Though his diligence and persistence had paid off in ferreting out any number of answers and solutions that led searchers to successful shipwreck discoveries, he failed more often than he succeeded. Most ships that vanished into thin air left no thread to follow. They were simply swallowed up by the infinite sea that very rarely gave up her secrets. On the surface, the Princess Do-Wan looked to be simply another one of the many dead ends Perlmutter had experienced during his decades as a marine historian. He launched the search by scouring his own immense collection of sea lore before expanding into the many marine archives around the United States and the rest of the world. The more impossible the project, the more he tackled it with inflexible tenacity, laboring all hours of the day or night. He began by assembling every shred of known historical information concerning the Princess Do-Wan, from the time her keel was laid until she went missing. He obtained and studied plans and designs of her construction, including engine specifications, equipment, dimensions, and deck plans. One particularly interesting bit of data he gleaned from the records was a description of her sailing qualities. She was revealed as a very stable ship, having survived the worst storms during her time in service that the seas around Asia could throw at her. A team of fellow researchers was hired to dig through archives in England and Southeast Asia. By using the expertise of other marine historians, he saved himself considerable time and expense. Perlmutter sorely wished he could consult his old friend and fellow marine historian, Zhu Quan, in China. But it was his understanding that Pitt wanted no revelations making their way back to Chin Shang. He did, however, contact personal friends on Taiwan for leads to still-living comrades of Chiang Kai-shek who might shed some light on the missing treasure trove. In the early hours of the morning, when most of the world was asleep, he stared into a computer monitor the size of a home entertainment video screen and analyzed the data as it accumulated. He peered at one of the six known photographs of the Princess Do-Wan. She was a stately-looking ship, he thought. Her superstructure was set far aft of the bow and appeared small in relation to her hull. He studied the colored image of her, magnifying the white band in the center of the green funnel, focusing on the emblem of the Canton Lines, a golden lion with its left paw raised. Her maze of loading cranes suggested a ship that could carry a substantial cargo besides her passengers. He also found photos of her sister ship, the Princess Yung Tai, which was launched and entered service the year after the Princess Do-Wan. According to the records, the Princess Yung Tai was broken up 6 months before the Princess Do-Wan was scheduled to be scrapped. A tired old liner doomed for the scrappers at Singapore would not have made an ideal transport to move China's national treasures to a secret location, he thought. She was beyond her time and hardly in prime condition to weather heavy seas on an extended voyage across the Pacific. It also seemed to Perlmutter that Taiwan was the more sensible destination, since it was where Chiang Kai-shek eventually set up the Chinese nationalist government. It was not conceivable the last known report of the ship had come from a naval radio operator in Valparaiso, Chile. What possible purpose could the Princess Do-Wan have for being over 600 miles south of the Tropic of Capricorn in an area of the Pacific Ocean far off the traditional shipping lanes? Even if the liner was on a clandestine mission to hide China's art treasures somewhere on the other side of the world, in either Europe or Africa, why go across the vast, empty region of the South Pacific and through the Strait of Magellan, when it was shorter to steer west, across the Indian Ocean and around the Cape of Good Hope? Was secrecy so consuming that captain and crew could not risk going through the Panama Canal? Or did Chiang Kai-shek have an unknown cavern or man-made structure hidden in the Andes to conceal the immense treasure, if indeed it could be proven the ship was carrying China's national historic wealth? Perlmutter was a pragmatic man. He took nothing for granted. He went back to square one and restudied the photos of the ship. As he examined her outline, a vague notion began to form in his mind. He called a nautical archivist friend in Panama, waking him from a sound sleep, and charmed him into going through records of ships passing west to east through the canal between November 28th and December 5th, 1948. With that lead being pursued, he began reading through a list of names of the ship's officers last known to have sailed on the Princess. All were Chinese, except for Captain Lee Hunt and Chief Engineer Ian Gallagher. He felt as if he was throwing chips on every number of a roulette table. "What are the odds of losing?" he mused. 36 out of 36? But then he had to consider the zero and double zero. Perlmutter was no old fool. He covered every bet, firmly believing that if only one number paid off, he'd win. He punched the buttons on his speakerphone and waited for a sleepy voice to answer. "Hello, this better be good. Hiram, it's St. Julian Perlmutter." "Julian, why in God's name are you calling me at 4 a.m? Hiram Yeager's voice sounded as if he was talking through a pillow. "I'm in the middle of a research project for Dirk, and I need your help." Yeager became marginally alert. "Anything for Dirk, but does it have to be 4 a.m? "The data is important, and we need it as quickly as possible." "What do you want me to investigate?" Perlmutter sighed with relief, knowing from experience that the Numa computer genius had never let anyone down. "Got a pencil and paper? I'm going to give you some names."
"Then what?" asked Yeager, yawning.
"I'd like you to hack your way through government census, IRS, and Social Security records for a match. Also, check them out through your vast file of maritime records."
"You don't want much."
"And while you're at it," said Perlmutter, forging onward,
"does it ever end?
I also have a ship for you to trace."
"So?
If my intuition is working, I'd like you to find what port it arrived at between November 28th and November 10th, 1948.
"What's her name and owner?"
"The Canton Line's Princess Do Wan," he replied, spelling it out.
"Okay, I'll start first thing after I arrive at Numa headquarters."
"Leave for work now," urged Perlmutter. "Time is vital."
"You sure you're doing this for Dirk?" demanded Yeager.
"Scout's honor."
"Can I ask what this is all about?"
"You may," replied Perlmutter, and then he hung up. Within minutes after he began his probe of Captain Lee Hunt of the Princess Do Wan, Yeager found the old seaman mentioned in various references in maritime journals listing ships and their crews that sailed the China Sea between 1925 and 1945. In Royal Navy historical documents and old newspaper accounts describing the rescue of 80 passengers and crew from a sinking tramp steamer off the Philippines by a ship captained by Hunt in 1936. Hunt's final mention came from a Hong Kong maritime register, a short paragraph stating that the Princess Do Wan had failed to arrive at the scrappers in Singapore. After 1948, it was as if Hunt had vanished from the face of the earth. Yeager then concentrated on Ian Gallagher, smiling when his search ran across remarks in an Australian Marine Engineer's journal, telling of Gallagher's colorful testimony during an investigation into a shipwreck he had survived that had gone aground near Darwin. Hong Kong Gallagher, as he was referred to, had little good to say about his captain and fellow crewmen, blaming them for the disaster and claiming he had never seen any of them sober during the entire voyage. The final mention of the Irishman was a brief account of his service with Canton Lines, with a footnote on the disappearance of the Princess Dowan. Then, to cover all bases, Jaeger programmed his vast computer complex to conduct a search of all worldwide records pertaining to commercial engineering officers. This would take some time, so he wandered down to the Pneuma Building's cafeteria and had a light breakfast. Upon his return, he worked on two other marine geological projects for the agency before finally returning to see if anything turned up on his monitor. He stared, fascinated, at what he saw, not willing to accept it. For several seconds, the information did not register in his brain. Now, suddenly, out of the blue, he had a hard hit. He spread the search in several different directions. Several hours later, he finally sat back in his chair, shaking his head. Feeling supremely self-satisfied, he called Perlmutter.
St. Julian Perlmutter here, came the familiar voice.
Hiram Jaeger here, the computer genius mimicked.
Did you find anything of interest?
Nothing you can use on Captain Hunt.
What about his chief engineer?
Are you sitting down?
Why?
Perlmutter asked cautiously. Ian Hong Kong Gallagher did not go down on the Princess Dowan.
What are you saying? Demanded Perlmutter.
Ian Gallagher became a citizen of the United States in 1950.
Not possible. It must be another Ian Gallagher.
It's a fact, said Jaeger, enjoying his triumph. As we speak, I'm looking at a copy of his engineering papers, which he renewed with the Maritime Administration of the U.S. Department of Transportation shortly after he became a citizen. He then hired on for the next 27 years as chief engineer with the Ingram Line out of New York. He married one Katrina Garin in 1949 and raised 5 kids.
Is he still alive? Asked a dazed Perlmutter.
According to the records, he draws his pension and Social Security checks.
Can it be he survived the sinking of the Princess?
Providing Gallagher was on it when she went down, replied Jaeger. Do you still want to see if the Princess Dowan arrived in an eastern seaboard port during the dates you gave me?
By all means, answered Perlmutter. And scan the shipping port arrival records for a ship called the Princess Young Tai, also owned by the Canton Lines.
You got something going?
Crazy intuition, replied Perlmutter. Nothing more.
The border of the puzzle is in place, thought Perlmutter. Now he had to fit the inside pieces. Exhaustion finally caught up with him, and he allowed himself the extravagance of a short 2-hour sleep. He awoke to the sound of his phone ringing. He allowed it to ring 5 times while his mind came back on track before answering.
St. Julian, Juan Mercado from Panama.
Juan, thank you for calling. Did you turn up anything?
Nothing, I'm afraid, on the Princess Dowan.
I'm sorry to hear it. I'd hoped by chance she might have made passage through the canal.
I did, however, find an interesting coincidence.
Oh?
A Canton Line ship, the Princess Young Tai, passed through on December 1st, 1948.
Perlmutter's fingers and hands tightened around the receiver.
What direction was her passage?
West to east, answered Mercado. From the Pacific into the Caribbean.
Perlmutter said nothing, soaking up a wave of jubilation. Several pieces were still missing in the puzzle, but a visible pattern was slowly emerging.
I owe you a great debt, Juan. You've just made my day.
Happy to have been of service, said Mercado. But do me a favor next time, will you?
Anything.
Call me during daylight hours. Any time my wife thinks I'm awake after we've gone to bed, she gets amorous.